What a great song that is. How beautiful heaven must be. We kind of talked about that this morning in class, just not being able to really describe it or put words to it. And you got to wonder why anyone would want to sacrifice that and not go there. If you're following along this morning, we're going to be in the book of Isaiah, chapter 30, the first 7 verses there. A Sunday school teacher decided to have her young class memorize one of the most quoted passages in the Bible, Psalm 23. He gave the youngsters a month to learn the chapter. Little Rick was excited about the task, but he just couldn't remember the psalm. He just couldn't put it to memory. After much practice, he could barely get past the first verse. On the day that the kids were scheduled to recite the 23rd psalm in front of the congregation, Ricky was very nervous. When it was his turn, he crawled up top of the altar and stood in front of the people and looked out and stood by the microphone and said proudly, "The Lord is my shepherd. That's all I need to know." Really, that's all we need to know in order to trust God in this world that we have here. A worldly kind of person came to the preacher one time defending her practice of attending worldly entertainment. She said, "But preacher, I can take Jesus Christ with me wherever I go." The preacher, after a few moments, quietly replied, "Indeed, it is so. I didn't know that was the order in the Bible. Is it for you to lead Jesus where you would go, or is it for him to lead you where he would want you to go?" You know, Egypt is often used in the scriptures to represent Israel's return to being worldly. It's a symbol. And trusting themselves and not God. Many times in the past, the prophets of old called Israel back to God from their iniquity and their relationships with the world and used Egypt as a metaphor for worldly, self-centered, hedonistic behavior. I've never understood why people in the church want to return to the world they have once tasted, the rich, bountiful fruit of God who gives us sustenance. It's kind of like this. The old saying, forget how bad it was when we're in a different situation, that the other situation would be worse. But not only that, but they had forgot that God was leading them. A pillar of clouds by day and a pillar of fire by night, with manna falling from heaven to feed them. And yet they grumbled, they complained. That got them 40 years in the wilderness. But they just could not trust God. Many times Israel sought the wickedness of their neighbors and Egypt, and we can similarly be tempted back to turn away from God and His promises. We forget what caused us to accept Christ in the first place, and like Lot's wife, we long for the life we once had outside of Christ and give in to those temptations. Those were the days of bondage for us also. Bondage to sin, uncertainty, worry, and the other things that weigh us down and shackle us to this world. You know, you think the old ball and chains that the prisoners used to have to keep them from being able to get away too fast. Probably seen more of it in the Keystone Cops or something like that. Just a big weighty ball on a chain attached to some guy. And that his sins that he was convicted of got him attached to. Yet, many people have a bigger ball that they're attached to. And it's this world here. They got a chain attached to this world and the worldly lust and the things of this world and the worry and uncertainty that this world has. And they're chained to it just as if they were chained to a 10-pound metal ball. Without Christ, we are slaves. And that is to be without Christ is to be separate from God. Without heirship, without promise, without hope in a sea of uncertainty. The allure of the world, like Egypt, is too enticing for some. They just give in. So let's look at our text here this morning. Woe to the, Isaiah 31. Woe to the rebellious children, saith the Lord, and take counsel, but not of me. And that cover with the covering, but not of my spirit. And they may add sin to sin. They walk to go down to Egypt, and have not asked of my mouth to strengthen themselves in the strength of Pharaoh, and to trust in the shadow of Egypt. Therefore shall the strength of Pharaoh be your shame, and to trust in the shadow of Egypt, your confusion. For his princes were at Zoan, and his ambassadors to the Hanes. They were all ashamed of the people, they could not profit them, nor be in help, nor a profit, but of shame and also a reproach. The burden of the beast to the south, into the land of trouble and anguish. From whence come young and old lion, the viper and the fiery flying serpent? They will carry their riches upon their shoulders of young donkeys, and their treasures upon the bunches of camels, to the people that shall not profit them. For the Egyptians shall help in vain, and to no purpose. Therefore have I cried concerning this. Their strength is to sit still. Egypt's strength is to let what happened to Israel. And Israel was not going to help them. We don't need to go to Israel, or spiritual Israel, Egypt today, I'm sorry. That is the world. They're grumbling in the wilderness that they were in. We live in a society that wants instant gratification. You want to put it in the microwave and a minute later have it come out and taste like a five-star restaurant. People want to please themselves and do it immediately. But they forget sometimes that they need to delay the gratification. I see people on a regular basis constantly choose to give up God to have what this life offers here. And in doing that, they give up a life with God in heaven for eternity for the pleasure of what they can do right now. They want to go to Egypt, the world. But I want to warn you, don't go to Egypt because it has nothing to offer you in reality. Whether we want to admit it or not, we're influenced by the things of the world. We're influenced by the things we watch, by the things we see, the culture we live in, and we can't escape that. But know that they influence us, and that we need to turn our eyes away from that and get back to God as often as we can. Some of the ways we can be influenced are not bad. We can be influenced by technology and things that can bring us good things into our home, but those same technologies can bring us bad things. The influence is negative. People go back to the world for their entertainment. We don't need to take a back seat to the world in any kind of area. We live in a society where entertainment is a very large part of our society. And churches in the early 20th century, when radio and things came out, and then television, saw church attendance drop off because of these entertainment mediums. People were choosing the world over God. It saddened me to think that a church would seek its entertainment from Egypt or the world. Every now, I'll hear people who've been around for a while talking about the changes that they've seen in society over time. One of the changes that's always talked about is the changes in the morality that's displayed on our TVs. You can't even watch a burger commercial without having some sexual innuendo or something like that on there that's not good. I mean, nothing we can watch, and this happens during the daytime. Hollywood is busy to seek and make movies of lies that are contrary to God, lies that don't need God, where there is no God, or where the religious people in these movies are portrayed in bad ways. And it's not to say that there aren't some greedy religious people out there. Some people have totally missed it. But to portray everyone like that is just them poking their eye in the eye of God. I'm telling you that these are the things that go past us for entertainment that even people of the church are watching. You know, one of the most popular shows they have out there is one called Desperate Housewives. And it's awful, the things that happens on that show. The evil that's perpetrated. The sins that are perpetrated on it. And yet many people watch it and think it's funny. It's not funny in God's eyes. Just watching some of the commercials, you walk away feeling dirty and violated and embarrassed as you've seen some of these commercials. The sad thing is that we allow these things to slowly change us over time. And over time, little by little, these influences from the world have eaten away at the shell that protects us from these things. From the armor, like in Ephesians, that we have. But we can repair that armor. We can make it better. We can make it strong again. And that's by changing from the worldly view to the godly view, from getting back to God. Some suggest that TV is giving the public what it demands, but it's also pushing its agenda on us. It addicts us to its poison, and it keeps us coming back for more. In Romans 1:28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do the things which were not convenient. Verse 29, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignancy, whispers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boastful, inventor of evil things, and disobedient with parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. Verse 32, without knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do it. A couple of things stands out in here. Inventors of evil things. There's not enough evil things to go around. We have to make more. And people will invent more and more evil things in life. And yet they know the judgment. They still do it. I can't understand that. When you come to God, when you walk anew and you're that new man or that new woman, the happiness and the joy that's in your heart can be maintained through this word here. The word speaks to us in volumes, not only about the things we're not supposed to do, but about the things that cause us joy. To know that we walk with the living God, and that the living God has put His Spirit into us as a deposit, a down payment, that we are going to be with Him forever. And that His Son came to die for us. Innocent, blameless, God Himself came down to save you and me. That's why I want to know that person more. I want to love that person more. And I want to know and love the people who love God more too. These are the things that should cause us to be able to keep ourselves away from these evil influences. Today, if you were to ask our children who their role models are, and you'd hear names such as Britney Spears and 50 Cent, as he calls himself, Puff Daddy, Usher, and many other celebrities. You know, but they're into drugs. They're into lifestyle. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll, as they used to say. These things are not what God wants for us. These things lead to destruction. If you see the problems that Britney Spears had mentally, and you see, you know, Heath Ledger, who obviously couldn't find happiness in the things he pursued as an actor, getting himself into drugs and eventually overdosing on those drugs. They have a lack of respect. They have poor stewardship. They have pride, and they use vile language, and many other negative traits. And this is what's being fed to us and fed down to our children, especially our children. You know, we have to live in the world, but we don't have to be of the world. But I guarantee you, if you try to separate from your world, the world tries to reach in and grab you through the television, through the radio, through other things, through billboards. You can't drive through Dallas without seeing offensive billboards. And I just wonder if some little child in some little car then asked Mom and Daddy, well, what is that? You know, and the embarrassment that's out there for our children to see. And we're far removed from the days of having people with strong moral character as our role models. People used to look up to these people. But then came a time, Hollywood came across, where no one's really like that. We're all flawed. And then came out these, what they call the anti-heroes. They're not necessarily a good person, but they did something good in the movie. And then that was good. But you know what? We need to set our goals higher than these people. You know, we all fail, we all fall short. But if our goal is to be a better person, then we should look to people who are better than us, who did better. We can look at some of our fathers and mothers and uncles and preachers we've known in the past and people we've elders and it just goes on. And Jesus and God and all these people who are an inspiration to us. Oh, we'll always fall short. But that's our goal. We should be inspired to do these things as God wants us to. I wish today parents would encourage their children to have godly role models within the church and not those role models that are out there. Also, in our learning, we don't need to run to Egypt for that. There's not a whole lot that the world can teach us. And I don't mean that, you know, there's a whole lot to learn from the world if you want to be a doctor, an engineer, or something like that, academically. But it's living life and being successful in life. You have a lot of people who have been successful in life, but their family life was horrible. And what does God tell us to do? He tells us to, first of all, love Him and then take care of our families and then take care of the brothers and sisters because they are our family also. And so many people who claim to be successes, or they're successes by the world standards, but they're not successes by God's standards. You may remember King Ahaziah was injured after falling off the lattice of his palace. He sent his messengers to the prophet of Beelzebub and God of Eglon to tell them if he would live. Elijah stopped the messengers and told them to bring the king back a single question, which was, is there not a God of Israel to consult? You know, the problem in our world is that people today are seeking the wisdom and learning from other means. They're going to mediums. They're going to Sylvia Brown. They used to listen to Jeannie Dixon. They go to all these people for the future. You know, that's like slapping God in the face. I don't trust you to take care of me in the future. I'm going to go see what the future is about. That's like telling God, I need another way besides you. God tells us our future. That if we live with Him, we'll live forever. And like that little kid, the Lord is my shepherd, that's all I need to know. That's all I need to know in my life. We don't need to seek out clairvoyance or answers from popular culture to find our way to God. The public school system and the colleges around, the universities around, are trying to destroy God. They're trying to take Him away from us. They try to remove prayer. They try to take this out. They try to take God out of the public square while being sensitive to other religions and their needs, while forgetting that many citizens are Christians also. We don't need to go to the world for our protection, just God. You know, I want somebody someday to tell me what this world really has to offer us that God can't match more and more. Can the world offer you riches? You'll leave that behind. Can the world offer you fame? You'll be forgotten in 100 years. Can the world offer you anything that God can't offer you? It can't. Prophet Jeremiah was appalled at the people for their sins, and one of the most appalling to him was their forsaking of God in Jeremiah 2:13. The people were leaving something great for something second rate. They were seeking after the broken cisterns, is the illustration he used, that cannot hold water when they had a spring of living water. I've done a sermon on those cisterns one time, and I don't know probably most of you, some of you have grown up with cisterns or had cisterns. And you know what's in that cistern? You know, frogs, snakes, anything you can get in there. You can put a screen over it, but something's going to get there. The mosquitoes are going to breed in there. It's not very clean water. It's not very healthy water. And what Jeremiah is telling us is, you have pure water. You have pure spring water flowing out of a stream that's as good for you as anything. You know, they try to sell bottled water that's really tap water, but they put a nice spring on the front of it because they're trying to sell us that idea. We don't need to drink from the cisterns, or nasty old cisterns, when God offers us pure water. But they were slaves of Babylon one time. Israel as a nation was divided into two parts about 922 B.C. The north called Israel and the south was called Judah. In 722, the north fell to the Assyrians. And in 586 B.C., the south fell to Babylon. And that's where they stayed till they were released and came back, and then they were under Roman rule. They remained in slavery for almost 70 years, and finally they were allowed to return by Babylon. Revelation 18:4-8 talks about that spiritual Babylon and her destruction. The point remains that God is calling us out of this world, out of Egypt, out of Babylon, and into the real promised land. They had a promised land out there that was land. But we have a promised land that we can't describe in mortal words, that we can't understand in mortal eyes, that we can't comprehend with our mortal minds. But God is going to get us there. He's our shelter. He's our defender. And in Him alone we can find true joy and true glory and happiness. Dr. George Sweeting once went on a trip to Niagara Falls with his family. Being springtime, they watched as the ice rushed down the river. Frozen inside the ice, he could see the outline of dead fish frozen inside the ice. They made an easy meal for the seagulls. They would land on the block of melting ice, chip away until they could get to the fish, eat it, and then fly off just before that chunk of ice flew over the falls and then crashed down. One feasting gull was not so lucky. As it approached the falls, it spread its wings and sought to fly away, but it had spent so long on the block of ice that its claws were frozen to that block of ice. It struggled and struggled until finally it went hurtling over the falls, unable to break the grip. Perhaps today, one of us has been feeding too long in this world. Perhaps we're too close to it. Perhaps we're stuck in it. We're mired in it. And we want to let go, but we can't. If that is the case, you got to do it before it's too late. Don't go to Egypt. Don't go to the world. Christ has plenty to offer in His church and with His people that we are called His ones. Luke 9:62. And Jesus said unto him, No man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of heaven. If we put our hand on the plow and started to head to heaven, knowing full well the riches and the glories, it's enough for a man not to know anything about it, but to know about it and to turn your back on that and walk away. I just can't understand it. They truly don't have a true vision of the joys of heaven, of the blissfulness of living a Christian life. They just didn't get it. When they became a Christian, they didn't continue with it. The first steps are easy. It's all the steps after that that take a lot of effort. I'll leave you with this one thing this morning that C.S. Lewis, noted author and a Christian apologist that stood up to Christianity back in the early 20th century. He once wrote, Indeed, if we consider the unblushing promises of reward and the staggering nature of the rewards promised in the Gospels, it would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures, fooling around with drink and sex and ambition, when infinite joy is offered to us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he can't imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea, we are far too easily pleased. What he's trying to tell us here, if we don't have that vision of heaven, that vision of heaven and its glory, of its riches, of its blessedness, of all the things that we'll experience there, the things that we won't experience there, like tears and sorrow and unhappiness and days that end and lives that end. If we don't have that full nature, we don't have it all. If we don't understand it, we're going to be like that little child. I'll keep making my mud pies here because that makes me happy. When a day at the beach, they would be so one. They'd want to be at the beach every day if they really knew what that was. And if everyone truly in this world knew what God and Christ wanted for us, if they truly knew what was in store for us, they'd all be clamoring to get in the doors. But they don't understand it. I don't know why. But if they did, and I hope you understand it today, and you take a hold of that and a tight grip and never let go of that, to walk with God someday, to talk to Jesus someday. to be with all the brothers and sisters in heaven forever and ever and ever. I can't think of a better place to be. Not making mud pies, but being on that nice beach. I don't know what your needs may be this morning, whatever they may be, won't you come as we stand and sing the song of invitation?